£100.
No,
there's no difference there. Because when someone, it's like Peter, I mean, the fact is, he's got so much money. I mean, he's brought, I mean, the presents he's brought, to be honest, I mean, I think, oh my God, what a waste.
Mm.
I mean, he's brought like bubble kits, the giant bubble, they were about £29, and like, there was two of them on the side, I saw. And I thought, well, I suppose he's got such rich friends.
Mm.
They like something like this. I mean, stupid.
Mm.
But I mean, you don't think, because he said to me, he said, oh, I suppose I better buy a Christmas present. And I said, yeah, buy me something that I'd choose. He said, well, I said, well, you buy me anything. Buy me a tin of biscuits.
Mm, quiet.
He said, tin of biscuits.
I
said,
I think that's the most acceptable present. Really is.
Because, you know, it's stupid things like that.
I know that Bob and Glynis will be delighted to have something because he's been out of work. All right. He invested the money that he received for, as a gratuity from British Telecom when he was made redundant. And he gets in about £3,600 a year on that. It's a lot of money. I think they've paid him out £30,000 or something like that. He'd been with them for 27 years.
God.
He joined when he was 17 or 16. Made redundant. He cannot get another job.
Were you saying that Ronnie, number four, he was a builder, his own business, van, the old lot, staff worked for him. And he hurt his back last year. And the doctor said, well, you'll either be dead within 6 months, you've got to give up the building work. He's only 30 odd, 37, 38. Giving it up, and he said, oh, well, got no kids, you know, live in this house, got no kids. And they always have holiday abroad, and they go out a lot, good social life, eat out once a week, you know. And because she can't have children. And, this was what, last June it all happened? He said, oh, I'll do something, you know, cement or milk meal or something, just cash a couple of hours. Couldn't get nothing.
No.
Absolutely nothing. And so he's round about the 40-ish age. And we spoke to him last week and I said, have you got a job yet? He said, no, but I'm getting worried. And he said, my wife works full time and we could cope on the money, but he said, now we don't go out, you know, once a fortnight.
Mm.
He said, we're not getting the luxuries like we could when we're both working full time. So we're surviving.
Because
I've got next to nothing mortgage. But,
yeah, it's like with me. I mean, because don't forget that I've got a good £200 to come on about the 5th of December from the British Legion savings.
Oh,
I've been saving £5 a week for practically the whole of the year. And that will be chucked into the building society so that I can, when I get my Marks and Spencer's debt come through, I can pay a great wodge
of that.
But I shall still have to draw on some capital then, nevertheless.
You will, I mean, you have to Christmas time, don't you?
I mean, I have thought, now what shall I do after Christmas? Because, you know, I like January. I've achieved a Christmas, I've made everybody happy.
That's right.
And I thought, that sewing machine is really going to get out to work, and I'm not going to buy any fabric. I'm going to make up the fabric I've got, and I'm going to do things for the house. Like, I want to make, Chris Goddard has put back the rail over my windowsill. I don't know whether you remember, I had a bamboo pole, and I made a thing, and it looked awful, and took it down, but I bought some beautiful crimson bias binding from Laura Ashley. Don't laugh, but I'm taking the valance off Paul's bed because it's a white valance. And I'm going to have this white frill rolled, and I'm going to roll the fabric. I'm going to leave all the pleating, not cut into that, but cut the valance platform and fold it over, if you understand me, and make it go over the pole.
That's a good idea.
So that I'll have all plenty of gathers, you see, but the pole will be smooth. My mistake was to thread something through that went into horrid, nasty gathers on the pole. Didn't look anything, just looked messy. So I thought I'd have it smooth over the pole, and then all frilly underneath, and this lovely line of soft crimson. And I thought, yeah, I know, when Philip goes and I'm in the ensuite bedroom, everybody says, it does pay you to have the house looking fresh. That room, the paint, to my eye, has either faded or changed colour or something. Now, I noticed this with, in the sitting room this year, I got John Frost, a friend of Nev's, to repaint the walls because, do you remember they were called soft peach?
Yeah.
And I looked at them and I thought, that isn't soft peach anymore. That's a glaring pink. Mm. I suspect that Dulux emulsion paint changes colour.
Oh yeah, it does. Tell you what, I've got some marvellous thing. The decorators at Peter's Works, because they tradesmen, they've got a colour card.
Oh yes, I've got that.
This is a tradesman.
Which one is it?
It's a Dulux, but you can't get it from the shop, it's a tradesman.
No, that's right. Anthony got me that.
Yeah. Yes. Marvellous, aren't they? Because yeah. Every single
Which year is it?
Now, this year.
Oh, I haven't got the up-to-date one. Let's have a quick gander through. So I thought, what have I got? I've actually got a great load still of gardenia and white mixed, which is what was put on the walls in the sitting room. I thought, I'll put that on the walls in the bedroom. I'm not going to bother to go out and buy a blue paint when I've got a damp grey tub of this lovely soft pale cream. I don't know whether I was with you when I bought rolls of borders. I've got a very pale grey.
In Marks and Spark, a couple of months back, they were selling borders off, and I bought a beautiful aqua one, and they were 50p each.
I wonder if they're still doing them.
No, they were just, it was just a one day I went down there shopping, and I bought some beige ones in the kitchen. And it cost me £2, I think, for the four. And I mean, I haven't put them up yet. I thought, I'll wait till I sort of read, like, the bathroom. I want to, it's got the wallpapers starting to peel off.
So speaking of wallpaper, I am going to paper the ensuite. I only need two rolls, possibly even one, so I'm going to look in the bin. And I shall make some more little cushions for the bedroom, and I'm going to use this idea of terribly ordinary cotton. There's nothing wonderful about the cotton, but the cushions look absolutely superb because they were just thin lines of the, you could tell it was, when you looked at it, quite cheap ribbon. But just arranged in a beautiful square and then a little bit of lace.
It's like those tissue boxes. Now I've got a friend of mine that makes them. Now that was $7.99 people for Rosemary. Now that was marked the nice ones. Now she gets them and she sells them for £10.
I see.
And they're not, I mean they're pretty, but they're not that magnolia range in Mark.
They're lovely, yes.
But she sells them, you know, she does parties as well, but she said she's losing the profit. Selling at £10.
Yes.
Because the lace, the tie, she said, tissue.
Do you remember when we tried to make floppy dogs?
Yeah.
And we found we just were wasting our time.
Wasting our time, yeah.
You're up against the factory conveyor belt system of sewing when one person does only ears and the other does
That's
bodies.
Right.
And, yes. Yes, that is lovely.
It's good, isn't it?
Yes. I think so. I hate to, but.
Talk to more tomorrow.
I must.
we must. It's 12:15.
I don't like going out late, nor do you.
Well,
but we'll have plenty of sleep. I mean, I think 5-6 hours sleep is absolutely enough.
Oh, yeah. I'll get Dave to set the alarm and then we can have breakfast before we sort of rush out. Otherwise, I'll sleep through.
Partly what did me today, I was. You see, I have to set a good example to Neil. And I was determined that everywhere, although not absolutely superbly glittering, everywhere was going to be tidy before I left. So I went through every blessed room, tidy, 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 throwing away rubbish. You know what it is, bitsy, bitsy, bitsy of this and that and the other. Came out without anything inside me, and then had this ghastly experience of not, I was banking on being able to get a hot cup of coffee on the train. No coffee. Then, this wretched journey, and I got thoroughly upset.
Oh, well, you could tell right on the phone you were sort of all keyed up with it.
Yeah.
Do you need a drink of water or a drink?
No, thanks, dear.
All right. You might hear Dave touch that off in the morning, but he probably won't.
I get my bottom fixed in here, and it's exactly like
actually very good at all. Up and down, up and down. All night.
You have?
Why? Don't know.
Excitement?
I love it. I mean, I was burning a bit. So I think a lot of it was sort of thinking about that blooming boiler.
Yes.
And then, yes. You know, Dave, I think, too, he was ever so restless. I believe he was expecting the water to burst or what it was.
Yeah, I know.
Because when I went to bed, I mean, you know, I tested it and it didn't seem too bad.
No.
It seemed sort of hot. But that's the trouble at the moment, because even if it's something minor thing, it seems so traumatic.
Exactly.
You know, especially to me at the moment.
Yes.
I don't know why, the smallest thing, I mean, seems such a...
Well, I think this must be a very common feeling with a lot of people. That they feel that they're balanced on a knife edge. There's so much, we've had to pay out so much, you had to pay out so much on more mortgage than you expected.
Did you say that? Did you see that programme on... Let me see. Oh, over there. It was on repossession. It was one day in the week or the week before. It was on a Channel 4, I think it was. And it was all about these people that had been, you know, encouraged to buy this house and then repossessed.
Mm.
And did you watch it?
No, I didn't.
And it's how people, you know, didn't want to, and they wouldn't, and they were saying that you don't give, the local MP was saying, you know, people just give their keys up and walk away.
Mm.
But it was awful, you know, there's so many of them.
It should not happen. I mean, I think it's somewhere, somebody is being greedy. It shouldn't happen, and it seems to have happened because 30 years ago, everybody like Jerry and me had a repayment mortgage. There were very few endowment mortgages. Now, a repayment mortgage, they will extend the term of the mortgage.
Yeah, but when we had a...
Well, the endowment, you can't extend it. I think they should make it so that you can extend it.
Yeah, but when
I just don't think repossession should happen.
But repayment now is dearer than endowment.
Well, they should do something about it, Brenda. That's all I can say. There should be some separate fund for bailing out people who are in real terrible difficulties.
Because
you see, people are not being helped. It's like my meal. Nobody is helping him.
Nobody wants to know, do they?
No, they don't.
Not their things sort of going on as... And now you think sort of it's time when people sort of would club together.
Yes.
But it was saying that this program was saying that they were buying a house, and it was telling you, you know, say they were, for argument's sake, they was buying this house, it was north and that, and they were buying this house and it was worth something like, I don't know, they'd got a 25 grand mortgage. They hadn't got... It wasn't, I mean, you know, to us it was quite a cheap mortgage, but sort of up there it was probably, you know, sort of a lot of money to them because not the work in there. And they'd bought this mortgage and their repayment was something like about, I don't know, £180 a month.
Mm.
And they said, you know, and then all of a sudden it sort of gone up 6%.
Yeah, that's it.
And it was 500 quid.
Mm.
And there was no way, you know, at 180 they'd struggled.
Mm. Mm.
And they thought, because those people were sort of like us, we thought, oh, we'll go for it.
Yeah.
It's going to be a struggle for a year, but you go for it.
Yeah, of course.
And you don't dream of it
going
up.
Nobody ever dreamed of this.
I mean, they reckon it's going to go back up now, don't they?
Yeah, probably will. I think that instead of Lawson putting interest rates up to squeeze inflation out of the economy, he should have stopped all credit. When Jerry and I were young, if at the end of the month there was no money in the account, the bank used to write you a filthy letter if you were £2 overdrawn. And you had, if it was no good you wanting something, and waving a bit of plastic at it. There was no bit of plastic to wave.
It wasn't.
Not a thing. If you wanted to borrow money from the bank to buy anything, there were two ways of getting money. You could go to the bank and ask for a loan, and mostly you got a dusty answer, because if you hadn't got shares to put down as collateral, you didn't get your loan. And the other way of doing it was to go on hire purchase, and when you wanted to buy something, like a three-piece suite, you went to somewhere like Bentall's, and they took you into a little room, and you said to the man, well, I want to buy this on hire purchase, and he went into a little room, and the man sat down, and you filled in a long form, you told him what your husband earned, what you could manage in the way of repayments, you had to put one third of the full price down.
Is that when you enjoy your first married, or?
Yeah. And you had to put one third of the full price. So if a three-piece suite costs, say, £150, you had to put £50 down. And you get the £100 over 2 years on interest.
So people couldn't get in that state, could they?
You could not get into debt, Brenda. You were not allowed to.
What you could afford, you had.
Exactly.
So when did the credit card they bought... But that's not what you say. I mean... These possession, it's not the fact they can't afford the mortgage. It's the fact they can't afford all the lifestyle they go with. That's what Dave said. I mean, the fact is, you know, there's blokes at work, same mortgage as us and earning the same as Dave. I mean, you know, they're in a dreadful state. I mean, they spend their wages before.
Mm.
And Dave said it's because they go out drinking and, you know, they're always buying things for the home.
Mm.
And the cars, I mean... Majority of blokes that they've found changed their cars three times.
Yeah. People have come to expect that. Now, you could do it in the 1970s, and well, yes, I would say from 1968 onwards with plastic cards and what's called revolving credit. You could just run up the credit. I mean, all my efforts after Christmas will be to get rid of these card debts.
Yeah, but with you, it's, I mean... All right, you don't want it over you, but you will clear it.
Oh, yes.
But the thing is, there's a lot of people that don't.
No, quite.
I mean, I
told
you...
The reason I'm running up these debts is that now I've got so little capital left that I've got to keep the capital for sheer disasters, like the boiler.
Mm.
And because you've got to pay that in cash.
But there's people that, you know, are still now spending them at Christmas. It's like Jane, still spending them. You know, still got like two holidays left on them, but then still run them up for Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, I now will do no spending.
Yeah, but you didn't have thousands outstanding before you know by spending yours like yesterday. You didn't think yourself, oh God, I owe £500 on Marks and Sparks.
No, I had a £50.
I'll top it up. That's it.
And when and I've now got what £300. Now as soon as I get my check from the British Legion for £200, roughly. I won't wait for for the bill to come in for the card. I shall send that off to Marks. I won't wait for them to send it to me.
Oh, can you send it off? Yeah, because it's going to be sort of six, well, it's longer now, isn't it? Before you get the bills. It's about 8 weeks, they said now. Seven.
I don't know. But they'll get their money. Too sweet.
You probably won't get the bill in anyway till after Christmas, will you now?
No, but they'll get their money.
And then when they send you the bill then, will they just, you won't get so much interest on
it? No, they'll just say payment, thank you. And won't be quite so much.
Mind you, and even easier, what annoys me, they've put the interest rate down on the cards.
Mm.
Charging everybody a £12 charge, but putting the rates down on it, so it encourages people even more, doesn't it?
Of course it does.
Think, oh well, where we normally was paying, you know, like I think, Jen said something like
23% APR. It was something like 2% a month.
Jen said something like about £80 a month interest.
She must have a colossal debt.
Hmm? And then I said, well, how are you doing your Christmas shopping? Collect your friends. But majority of people, I mean...
I mean, my £500 limit on Marks was what I asked for. I could have asked for far more.
My mum, she had about a grand on Debs.
Yeah, they asked you.
And then she went in one day and she knew she'd had that. I said, can I extend it?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, of course you can.
Well, do you know what my... did I tell you what my extension is? What happened with the access when I got into money difficulties on Folkley? I simply phoned them. They put it up so that I could buy things on access that I could get rid of. I mean, those were the days when I knew that you could sell a house just like that. I didn't know that I was going to have to sell my house at 25,000 less than all my neighbours were selling it. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is where you get caught.
Why do you think if you'd stayed in there now?
Well, I don't know what would have happened to me.
You'd have just, well, I mean...
couldn't have survived.
Yeah. They're going for about 95 to 105 down there.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Because I'll tell you who's not... Pooh, next door to Pooh, that was up for sale. That hasn't gone still, that's been on the market for ages. And the corner house is up for sale. Next to you, on the house on the... if you stand at your front door, on the left.
Oh, yes. On Heathlands Drive.
Yeah, on the corner.
The Grovers.
Yeah.
Remember the Grovers musical
girl? Yeah. And that's, I think, going for about 98.
That's ridiculous. I know that if I wanted to come back here, this is the time that I could do so.
Well, it's a buyer's market, isn't it, if you haven't got mortgages and that.
I'm waiting until... I'm not thinking about the prices of anywhere until I've sold.
Because but then you'll get more value by selling yours up there than you would down here.
Yes, yes.
Much more, because...
well, houses are selling very, very slowly. But you do see the moving vans on the go.
Yeah, I mean, you was talking about a good year on the market round here.
Well, I put mine on the market about 10 weeks ago. I haven't had a look. I haven't had a nibble yet. No, it'll be interesting. It will be interesting.
After Christmas, it will.
Yes. It'll be interesting to see exactly where the prices settle down.
Where was it there? Oh, that was it. And this repossession program also had a house auction. And they had flats in London. And there was like... sort of, I suppose guys like Peter there. And they interviewed them afterwards. And one guy bought three. He bought two flats in London. And they rated it with the high when the house boom was on. They were going for about 100,000.
Mm.
You picked two flats up there for 45,000.
You can, in Ipswich, Paul was looking at the property because he'd like to meet a girl, and the two of them, he'd like to buy, and he'd like to meet some girl who's already got perhaps either a council flat or something. He said that he and Karen could have... he said at the present prices, he and this Karen that has left him, they could have had a place together, because some one-bedroom flats, two-bedroom flats around are going at 35,000, 31, prices like that up in the Ipswich area.
Mm. But this was for two flats. And it was like there was this couple, and they were, I don't know, about 60, 65, the pair of them. And they had no mortgage, and they had a little bungalow and everything. And they went to an auction, and she was saying how interesting it was. And she could have a like four-bedroom house for 55,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they were in good areas.
Yeah.
But what it was, they were like, it was like GA owned them, Man and Co. And they had sort of like a job like they said, a lot of them. What they've done is they brought in this area. I mean, well, in most areas, they've bought the repossessed. They've got about 8 or 9 houses. They're either renting them out or they're leaving them empty. Majority of them are empty around here. And then they'll just hang on to them for about 5 or 6 years. So the house goes up and then...
The building societies are worried about their repossessed houses. They thought that it was going to be all easy. I read this in the Telegraph. They thought, oh, easy, we're going to...
sell them,
parcel them out amongst the estate agents, and the estate agents don't want to know, because people don't want to buy a repossessed house. For one thing, they think it's unlucky, and the second thing is that repossessed houses very, very quickly begin to look dirty and battered.
Mm.
And I mean, I remember myself when I was a young girl, that you used to walk along the road and you'd see houses that were going to rack and ruin. And you see, it's the central heating and the women opening and shutting doors and running round and keep... It's people who keep the houses going.
But there was a house on this repossession and it was sort of like just a sort of young couple and they'd bought this house and it was like a two-bedroom house. And they'd done up beautiful.
Oh.
Really, well, they just fell behind, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they obviously... And it's quite an expensive sort of social life and everything.
Yeah.
Whatever, and they just couldn't. He lost his job, which was the same old story. And anyway, they went back to visit, and they go back every 2 or 3 weeks to visit this house. They've got kids. No, they've got kids. They had got three kiddies, that's right, because the council housed them. And they're in this grotty council house now. And they go back, and they said, and you saw them going back and saying, look at the state of the garden, look at
yes.
the state of the woodwork looks tatty. And we
that's
spent
right.
all these years on
yes.
this.
Yes.
All the mail and junk letters all through the door and everything looked tatty.
Mm.
And they said, you know, there should have been a way around it where they kept this
there
couple
should.
In there.
There should.
It's now been empty
even
6 months.
Even if people had sold their houses to the local council and turned, you see, on the continent, they do not build council ghettos, you know, like you lived in, where you walk in and say, oh, these must be council houses as you're driving through. You find a house to rent that seems right for your, about the price, perhaps a bit higher, but about right for your level of income. And you go to the local housing agency, the council housing agency, and you get a grant to help you with your rent. So that there aren't special council houses. If any house could be a council house.
Mm.
And it means that
I don't think the council can afford to do it now, can they?
No, they can't. But then it should have been possible for the councils to have... I don't know. It seems... I remember walking up and down on the beach with John Smith about 8 weeks ago, was it? He came to see me. It was before I had this illness, these two illnesses. Or was it after the diarrhoea, but before the two lovely colds? And we were walking up and down on the beach of Aldbury, and the most interesting part of our conversation was that we were saying we both started out as not Conservatives. I've never voted Conservative in my life. But we started out as very loyal people. British justice was marvellous. British Parliament was wonderful. The Queen is great. And John Smith said, I now don't believe in anything. I mean, you're talking about old, middle class, rather staid people.
Mm.
And you should be taking this.
Yeah.
Don't mean any disloyalty. Don't take me to the tower. he was saying he now sees weaknesses in and how pathetic our governments are.
Mm. Well, they reckon
poll
now,
tax,
I mean...
Brenda. The poll tax.
But they make me die because you're a day... I mean, we got this sort of letter, the bailiffs were coming in of it, because we were a day late. A day late.
Ridiculous.
On it. And I said, there's people out there that don't even pay it. You know, and... I mean, because Dave totally refuses on the poll tax to have a standing order or direct debit.
I have to, Brenda.
Yeah.
I've
well,
got
he
no
just
option.
Totally, because I think he knows so many people that don't pay it.
Well, it makes me very bitter because, you see, this is the sort of thing that John Smith and I were going over one thing after the other. We were brought up to believe that if you didn't do the right thing, you would be punished.
Mm.
And people are getting away with it.
But what I can't understand, I mean, majority of people, I mean, you've got to pay the debt. In the end, whatever. Why
mm-hmm.
keep putting it off? People put it off, and that is where they get in the trouble.
Well, I don't know that it's that. I think that people who are living in a fixed abode are paying. In the end, they're being taken to court and made to pay. But it's people like my lodger.
Yeah, but they were saying now, it's like our own local paper, the poll tax is going to go up, probably might be even go up double because of the non-payers.
Because
of not having to take them to court, And they just said in the end, again there was an article or something, and it was saying that, you know, that did you eventually get the money? And they said no, they had to write it off. They never ever did pay it.
Well, they are spending a fortune on hounding Paul. Then somebody...
Because he's at no fixed address, is he?
Well, he left, he was with Karen, he came to me. He left me and went down to Gloucester. He dithered about running up and down the road between Gloucester and here. Stowmarket. Not knowing where he was going to park his bottom. And eventually, well, I had a questionnaire. Letters were coming to him, which I sent back because Paul had never told me where he lived in Gloucester.
Mm.
And they were addressed to him, and they were from the council, and I simply wrote on the outside, no longer here, address not known, which was true. And then they sent me a questionnaire saying they understood that he'd given my address, and was he still resident? And I said no. Did I know his address? I said no. Eventually, an expensive chap, you're talking $15,000 a year, an expensive chap comes to interview me.
Ago. Yeah. Well, I told him to go with Jill at 2 o'clock and then tell Jill that he's got to be back by 3:30, 4 o'clock. That then if he wants. I'll tell him. I'll ask him if he wants to do that, and then I'll drop him off, because he said he didn't really want to go over there and stay there 6 hours. Mind you, I suppose if you dropped him off at the hospital this afternoon, just dropped him outside. Well, no, I'll say as I'll pick him up about 5 or 6 or something, because otherwise he'd be there till 9 o'clock. So what time will you be back at the thing? So what do you think? Is it best you wait, or? Yeah, you will. Alright then. I mean, he's here anyway. He's not going out at all this morning. He said he'd be here till 2 o'clock. He said he'd be laying in bed late, he said. Yeah, alright then, man. Bye. He said, I thought I'd catch you out, didn't he? It'd be up.
Oh,
trying to get rid of his second run so he can get home by 11.
Oh, yes.
So he can go back on this late. Because he's been up now, he's used to it, his body clock's telling him to get up. I mean, that's what this morning happened.
Yes.
1:45, and he said, God, is it time to get up, Brent?
Oh.
And I said, no, of course he's been on it for 6 weeks.
Yes, quite.
Hates the blooming hours, but
quite.
Of course now they're putting on 4:30. Your body clock's well
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
They said
yeah.
that he's just phoned the firm from, he's up in, where's he? Lunsford Park, wherever that is, in London, I think. And he said that he phoned him and said, could they change it? And he finished at 11, then he can still start tomorrow night again
yeah.
at 1:45.
Yeah.
And he said if they can get someone else for the run, they will.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, what else was we saying?
Well, we were talking about the general lack of faith in government.
I know, you were telling me about Suit. This guy, $15,000, turned up for Paul.
Well, yeah. Suit comes along and sits there, sipping coffee. Takes about 3/4 of an hour. I don't say that it was like being grilled by the KGB. He was most polite and courteous. But he was going to find out where Paul was.
How did you get your address?
Hmm?
How did you get your address?
Well,
when he worked in Safeways or something.
Yes. Somehow they got it. Or was it? Or did I have to fill in a census form just at the time when Paul was with me? When he happened to be with me?
Yeah.
They knew anyway. They knew that he'd been here. And I mean, Paul wasn't trying to dodge anything.
Well, so that's what they say. There's even people that come over here for a holiday for 3 months have to pay it, don't they?
Yes.
Sort of twice.
So, God knows what it's costing them to collect.
Didn't you have to pay it?
Oh, yes. Not the full amount.
Mm.
He pays a small amount, and in fact, I keep on meaning in the back of my brain to get hold of him and say, has he been paying it? Because when he was down at Andy's Aerials, I think he used to go on foot to the post office every week when he got his gyro. I think he used to pay then and there. It's only about £1.80 a week or something for him.
Mm.
He was paying it. I was making sure that he is paying it.
Well, you better check if those £1.80 adds up, don't they?
Oh, yes. It will be Moi who has to put the bill to the question on that one.
So what about... your other friends, what are they going to do? The ones that have got the Shirley and Terry that have got the house on the market?
They're not sure whether they're going to sell because...
Can they afford to stay?
Marginally, now that Shirley has got a job.
So they just sort of put it on the market to see if it'd sell?
Well, at the time they put it on the market, we all three thought that it would be a good idea if both families sold out and moved into something smaller, and perhaps moved near to each other in Stone Market. But now I just don't think that's going to happen. I honestly, Brenda, I don't know whether I'm going to come back down here, whether I'm going to move to Norwich, whether I'm going to stay in Stone Market. So, to be truthful, Brenda, I'm happier not thinking about it.
Because you've just got to, what, the mood sort of takes you.
Exactly. At the moment, I'm even thinking of redecorating my bedroom.
Dave even came up with an idea he was talking about the other day. And he said, "What? Why doesn't Jean rent? Put your money in the capital, rent, and live on the capital, but the interest rent."
Well, I have thought about that vaguely, Brenda. It'll all depend on what the situation is when I sell.
He said that because then, you know, he said she would have no upkeep of the house.
Mm, that's right. That's right. But I don't know whether Dave has... I mean, you see, my friend Pam, whose husband Steve is an airline pilot, she knows quite a bit about this because Steve was an illegitimate child in London, in West Ham.
Mm.
His mother was an office cleaner. And she conceived Steve by a married man, a poor working class man. No question of a divorce and marriage, she just had to get on with it. She was able to keep Steve because where she lived, within there was a little coronet of little tatty houses that have since been pulled down. And she was related to 15, in 15 out of the 22 houses, she had a relative.
Mm.
So she could always dump the baby on somebody. Mm. She got built-in babysitting facilities. And Steve knows a lot about being poor. And Pam said that Steve said to her that when he was at West Ham Grammar School, boys' grammar school, everybody knew that the people who were best off were the council house people.
Mm.
If you were in private accommodation, you were nothing like so well off. You see, I have lived in private rented accommodation with my mother in the late 1930s.
I'm just looking at these dogs because it was too cold to put out there once we go out.
And the trouble is that the English landlord has a name for being greedy. And it wasn't very nice, Brenda, because landlords are entitled to inspect where you live. Or they were.
Yeah, but you wouldn't bar... I mean, like Dave said...
Because it wasn't very comfortable. You can't do exactly what you want in a rented place.
Yeah, but in searching, I mean... Sorry?
You can't go putting up shelves. If you put shelves on the wall in a rented house, those shelves immediately belong to the landlord. That was the law then. It may not be so now.
No, I was going to say, yeah, because I know Cheryl and Andy, they had a... that they rented a four-bedroom detached house. And they even actually decorated. The landlord said to him, you know, she sort of took a lease out for 3 years on it.
Yes, but until recently, there hasn't been a lot of rented accommodation. And landlords have probably been quite pleased to get a decent tenant. When my Mary Ann had her rented rooms in Fern Hill, they had the top floor of a three-floor house. And their landlord, who was Polish, was ever so delighted with them, and he said, you know, he talked to them and he said, you can do whatever you like, because Mary Ann and Mitch were superior people. They were going to keep the place clean, they were going to keep it warm, they weren't going to have wild parties.
But her place she had, it was unfurnished, but it was fantastic.
Dave has got a point, and the thought has crossed my mind. And thank him very much for his idea, and I will...
He makes me laugh, because he often says... it's when I've spoken to you on the phone, and he'll come back and he's like, has Jean thought about renting, Ben? I said, she don't want to rent. And he said, why? He said, if she then sold her house, he said, put the capital. He said, all right, he said, we're not buying a, you know, another house and now, and, you know, the fact is, he said, all right, if she got one in her area or wherever? He said, then she can put a capital, he says, and the interest on the capital, that can pay the rent.
But you see...
And I said, yeah, but then she's got no house to lead to her.
And you're at the mercy of the landlord putting the rent up, Brenda. I mean, I know that people have been hit by the mortgage rise, and of course, in my lifetime, I've never known anything like this. Nobody has.
Well, I mean, I said to him, I don't think, you know, I mean, it was just ideas, I think. He said,
yes,
I'm not saying to do it.
I'm glad of people's ideas.
But
because
I said to him, I don't think it's a good idea. And I said, he's got, you know, she'd have nothing to leave. And he said, yeah, but both her children...
Oh, my children are not worried about that.
That's what he said. He said,
no,
they're both,
not.
You know, he said, not knowing her children, he said, but knowing what he sort of picked up about your kids, he said, you know, to them, he said, it wouldn't be a matter of, there was nothing.
No, it wouldn't.
Because
it wouldn't.
They're both sort of comfortable.
Very.
And, you know,
very.
They're more concerned, Jean's getting on with her life herself,
yes,
now.
Yes.
Than worrying about her, you know, sort of on the doorstep saying, oh, you've got to look after me, here's
quite
the money,
quite
look after me.
They don't want that.
You know, they don't
they do
want
not.
It.
No.
Different if he was really ill.
Oh, yes.
But I mean, you know, as it stands, I mean, you wouldn't want it and they wouldn't want
no,
it.
No.
They're quite happy, you let them get on with their life.
Yes.
But then you haven't got the security of renting, I don't think. Like you say, you're at the mercy. I mean, the fact you can do things and, you know, right, you haven't got the upkeep if repairs need doing. But I think that keeps you going. You've got your house.
Yes, it does. It gives me an interest.
I agree you don't need that great big house.
No, I don't. I'd be glad to get rid of the great ox, but I can't, so there's an end of it. And
yeah, but eventually you will. I mean, you leave it on the market,
yeah.
And I mean,
it's not as though I've bought a house which has got anything wrong with it. It's not on top of a nuclear plant. It's not next door to a pub. It hasn't got...
Oh, it's a very sellable house
very
in the right...
House.
But, I mean,
yes.
It's just ridiculous at the moment, because, you know, you would think near Lacey Dear the houses are sellable. But, I mean, they're not.
No.
You know, and... In this area, that's what the guy was saying, houses over 100,000 are not selling.
No.
95.
Yeah.
But people want the more the 60, 70,000.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
no way, you know, I mean, you know, people have got these beautiful big houses like Leicester. Well, this is worth 200, you know,
yeah.
185, it's got to be.
A house,
they say no.
A house is only worth what people will give for it. I read many years ago that houses are part of the, really, the last true free market where a willing buyer meets a willing seller. A house is only worth what somebody will give.
But there was it's like, Kasuba was telling me that, you know, he works for the mortgages, so he was saying it was for an incident was a house, you know, the Grove, those great big Victorian houses.
Mm.
I don't know what they were worth, and she was saying, they must have been worth quite a bit, because they're big, detached, solid houses, aren't they?
The Grove is a mixture, some are semis.
Yeah, well, this one was one of those big four stories. I mean, enormous. It might have even been five. But it, you know, had bedrooms and bathrooms and,
mm.
and a big basement and everything on it. And that, she said, was repossessed, and it went for 75,000. And then she said, on the she said, I looked at houses like this, she said, and they were about 125 in a state.
Yeah. I could buy at the moment.
Well, Guildford, yeah. I mean, you can buy houses at Guildford at 60, 55, from 55 to 75, and there's no way you could have done that 3 years ago.
No. I'm keeping my mind flexible. The first firm offer I get, now, and let's put it like this, I've put the estate agent has put a number on the house. As far as he and I are concerned, it's just a number, and that is 102.
Mm.
If somebody comes along and offers me 90, I shall say, well, what about 92? And they might say, all right. Because people are being encouraged to offer you silly prices.
That's right.
But I shall say, I shall say to the estate agent, how determined are these people to move? What's the man's situation? Has he got to move because of his job or whatever? Having got an offer, I will then get on to you to get on to the estate agents here, Guildford, Camberley. You can do a few phone calls while Peter is out.